I think the thing that's really exciting right now is that it's really kind of like the gatekeepers are gone. Like artists have a direct line to their fans, whatever way they find it, you know, and now there's so many ways, like they can go to Discord, they can go to here, there, they can go to, you know, wherever, all these different ways and find their communities. And it's like back in the fans' hands instead of like gatekeepers. And I think that is just like a really exciting time. So I think you just have to be like super agile and you just have to like pivot to whatever is working at the moment. Like that's just kind of like marketing, you know, go where your fans are.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com. What's going on? Welcome to the New Music Business. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book. Third edition is out now. Everywhere, hardcover, ebook, audiobook. If you like listening to books, you can find it wherever you find audiobooks or any kind of book. Today, my guest is Michelle Harrison. She is the founder and head of MPH Collective, which is a new kind of management company. Previously, she has worked at Monotone, Arrange Music. She did stints at Virgin and Hollywood Records. But she spent most of her career doing artist management. Previously, she worked with artists like Vampire Weekend, Alanis Morissette, Jamie Foxx, Raphael Sadiq. And now she currently manages R&B star Umi, New York alt-pop duo Bo, and R&B singer Healy, along with a few producers, namely Kai Gone Crazy and Austin Brown. We do spend a bit of time discussing what it means to manage producers. And if you're a producer listening to this, kind of more in the pop producer realm or pop songwriter realm, kind of what that entails. But we spent most of the time kind of what it means to be an artist in this day and age, on the cusp of a potential ban on TikTok, or how to use TikTok, or songs getting muted on TikTok, and whether you need TikTok at all, and where we're at as an industry, but more so how she approaches it with her artists. Many of her artists are on the younger side. And just kind of how to approach management and release strategy. We talk about digital marketing for a bit, kind of how our artists go about promoting music, the support teams that you need and who works on that specifically, from, you know, social media to ads and all of that stuff, where the label comes into play, if there is a label, or the distribution company. So, you know, we talk about the different kinds of deals out there. She was actually transparent about, you know, one of her artists is shopping right now, if you want to call it that. Looking at different labels and distribution deals, and she reveals kind of what are the deals looking like these days, which are very different from what they looked like 5, 10 years ago, let alone 20 years ago. And she did mention, you know, the kinds of deals she's seen and the kinds of deals she's not seen. So it was very insightful. I learned a lot, and I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation with Michelle. You can find MPH Collective on Instagram. It's just kind of a holding page right now, but you can find all of her artists, of course, on the socials and the DSPs. You can find all of us that make the show happen on Instagram, TikTok, X, Threads. You can find me at Ari Herstand on Instagram. Visit aristake.com and get on the email list. That's where you're going to find the most relevant up-to-date information. We're going to send out stuff about the new music business, about new podcast episodes, stuff that you just need to know and should know about the new music business. So aristake.com, get on the email list. But right now, if you could just pause this episode, leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, or thumbs up on YouTube, or however you're listening to this right now, give us that review, and hit the follow or subscribe button if you want more of these to pop into your feed. All right, let's kick into the show. Michelle Harrison, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm so grateful to be here.
Absolutely. So you have been killing it in the industry for a while, and I've seen that you've kind of jumped around at some pretty big companies, some of the majors, and now like recently you started what I guess is being called MPH Collective, and I'd love to kind of just hear what that is. I know you have a lot of experience with management, and I know you were at Friends at Work for a bit, but I'm curious at the approach of what MPH is doing and how you approach management in general.
Thanks for the kind words. Okay, well, should I tell you my history or just start with talking about MPH Collective first?
I would love just MPH Collective first. I'm sure we'll get to your history, but I think to kind of set it up, let's start there, and then we're going to jump all over the place.
Okay. Well, MPH Collective was sort of like my idea for what I felt I wanted as like kind of like a manager coming up within bigger companies, mm-hmm. that I wanted to provide to people that I worked with. So basically, I wanted, first of all, like autonomy when it came to managing my own clients and making my own decisions, you know. And also just in terms of like my day-to-days and people that come up under me and building my own team within MPH Collective, I wanted to be able to allow them a space to grow, sign mm-hmm. their own clients, be able to like have back end on the stuff that they work on eventually, like just kind of like a growth trajectory. So mm-hmm. that was sort of like the brainchild. And here we are.
Very cool. Okay, so now let's go back a little bit into kind of what led you to that position where you want kind of the autonomy and you want to make sure the attention is paid and all of that. So yeah, give me a little bit of the background of how you got to where you are.
I started management at Monotone in 2003, so a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I was part of the team that was Ian, Tiffany Steffens, and myself, who kind of started Monotone together and mm-hmm. developed all the, like, my main focuses were Vampire Weekend, The Shins, and then later on Jamie Foxx. Those were the three like focus. I also worked on Broken Bells and Banks and you know, many other artists there, but those were my three mains. And then, you know, I think I got to like a little bit of a glass ceiling there. Like I was just wanting to grow. And so it was a really hard decision to leave there because I just love all those people. It's just such an amazing company. The clients were amazing. It was a very, very hard decision to make, but I just felt like for my own professional and personal growth, I needed to leave. Yeah. And Ty Stickloris, offered me a job to go be co-head of management at Friends at Work, which was kind of like the trajectory that I wanted. It was like a little bit more, you know, I was able to sign my own clients there. I got back end. I was able to, you know, kind of like run the company. So I was there for a year. It didn't turn out to be the right fit for me, just culturally speaking. Sure. So then I left, and that was actually when I launched MPH Collective, was after I left there.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. And then I signed Bo, who I still manage now, an indie rock band out of New York City, a female duo. Mm-hmm. And then like kind of at the same time as I was starting to get MPH Collective off the ground, Range came along, and Range was sort of like, it had the same ideals that I had thought for my own management company. Like it was a board, music department was a board. It was a bunch of us like that kind of like had a say and were equals. And it was like egalitarian in terms of the way people were paid and, you know, the deals. And so that sounded great. I was like, okay, this is exactly what I set out to do. This is a bigger company. It kind of fast tracks my goals. And then I did that for 3 years, and it was an amazing company. I'm so grateful for all these experiences and what I learned. But I think for me, in the end, again, I went right back to like, I still really want the autonomy and the control. I guess I'm just an entrepreneur. Like at the end of the day, like it just kind of wanted to be able to do it on my own terms, you know, and that's kind of it. And here I am.
Is there a connection with MPH and Range at all, or is MPH its own entity right now?
No, I was at Range for 3 years. I left there in December and started Range. So, I mean, and started MPH Collective. So MPH Collective is my own company, separate, like completely just me.
Cool. And was Range, or is Range, it still exists even though you're not there, just management, or was there a label side? I saw that you were repping, some songwriters and producers, not just artists. Like, what is Range?
Range is a really big company. It has many different departments. The music mm-hmm. department itself was, they have a publishing arm, they have records, they have management. Mm-hmm. Then on the broader scale, they have film and TV, they have branding, they have, what else do they have? Influencer, all sports. I think the idea behind it was to create an environment that was sort of like an agency where you had everything at arm's reach, but it's a management company. So a little bit more bespoke, smaller roster. That was sort of the mission statement there. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. And I saw that, we're just going to jump right in with, some of your current clients now, Umi, and, Healy, Bo, I see that, I mean, great artists, I see that some of their music has been were muted on TikTok. I'm curious at the approach, because this is, what is the big discussion point right now in the industry. So talk to me about just recently, I guess, over the last couple years or something, with these artists, with these kind of, they're on the younger side relatively, seen some great success. What has been kind of the way that you work with TikTok and these artists and how you're using TikTok, and has the most recent and one, why are these songs muted? I'm curious, because I think these artists are independent. And has it really affected your strategies?
Well, so they're muted because somebody that owns a portion of the song is signed to Universal in some way. So mm-hmm.
As a songwriter, if you take
Wherever You Are, which is Umi's most recent release, mm-hmm. It
featuring V of BTS.
Exactly. Yes. Right. One of the producers is signed to Universal Music Publishing. So V-Ron. Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that portion, it takes the whole song down, portion owned by Universal. So that's why. And okay. I mean, it's funny because I have a 19-year-old daughter and she's like, why is TikTok doing this? Like, this is really affecting my life. She's like, all of my TikToks are muted, which is really funny. But, I think that it's so complex. I don't even know what to say. I love it in a way, because I feel like songwriters do deserve to get paid, and all these mm-hmm. huge tech companies are making a ton of money off of their art, and they're not making any money a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great that Lucian's fighting the fight, just at least from what I know. I mean, I hesitate.
Lucian Grange, the CEO and president of Universal Music Group.
Yes.
Right.
I hesitate to, say too much, because I really don't know enough about both sides of the argument. But I do think that this is a conversation that needs to be had. And it's been talked about for years now about, like, how do we get artists, writers, producers paid for all this tech, like streaming and, using mm-hmm. the music in all these different ways. So I love that. In terms of how it affects our strategy, I mean, it's just like everything. TikTok's been the biggest thing lately, but a few years ago it was Instagram. A few years mm-hmm. before that it was Facebook. It's continually changing, and I've seen that throughout my career. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that's really exciting right now is that it's really kind of like the gatekeepers are gone. Like mm-hmm. artists have a direct line to their fans, whatever way they find it, And now there's so many ways. Like they can go to Discord, they can go to here, there, they can go to wherever, all these different ways, and find their communities. And
yes,
it's like back in the fans' hands instead of like gatekeepers. And I think that is just like a really exciting time. So I think you just have to be like super agile, and you just have to like pivot to whatever is working at the moment. Like that's just kind of like marketing, go where your fans are.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. The fact that artists can connect directly more so with the fans, and there aren't gatekeepers blocking that connection, is a wonderful thing for this generation of artists. That being said, you alluded to, or you mentioned that you appreciate what Lucian and Universal Music Group is doing in terms of the strategy. Do your artists appreciate the strategy? Your artists are younger, and it seems like they're very active, especially Umi, on TikTok. What are you hearing from them directly?
Umi's like always a quintessential optimist. She's always okay. Like, it's great. I mean, she loves TikTok. She's native yep. there. Like, she really loves it, but she's mm-hmm. also like optimistic about she's hopeful that it might bring back long form video if short form video isn't as accessible. So that excites her.
Cool.
You know? So, that's like the one piece of feedback I have on that.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I mean, with a looming potential complete ban of TikTok in the US, this might all be moot, in 6 months or whatever. It's curious. You know, I've written a lot about this topic lately. And like I wrote a piece in Variety about this kind of approach that Universal was taking unilaterally, muting all of this stuff. And like you said, your artist, independently released, not releasing through Universal, but because they co-wrote a song with a Universal songwriter, the song was taken down. I take a little bit of issue that UMG is kind of dictating the terms for everyone in the industry, and that it's kind of everyone's getting caught up in this. And unfortunately, artists don't really have a seat at the table. We haven't really had a say in this. It's kind of like we have to just go along with whatever Lucian feels. And I've heard rumors that it's really just an ego play, and his ego got a little bit hurt because they didn't agree to the terms, or they did agree and then he's flipped the terms at the 11th hour. Who knows? We have no idea what's happening with these negotiations. Exactly. But, you know, I just like I have spoken to a lot of artists who have been reliant on TikTok for promotion, have connected directly with their fans, like you said, this direct access to promote their music. And now that just got taken away from them without really their say. And I totally can appreciate what you're saying with the, artists and songwriters should be compensated fairly from the tech giants that have so much money and so much reach. And I fully, appreciate that. I'm just wondering if this approach was the right approach, without kind of consenting or consulting any artists or their sub-labels for that matter. So that's nice to hear that your artists are optimistic about it all and just kind of moving, going with the flow and all of that. It's all good. So cool. Well, let's just talk about promotion.
Yeah. I do not disagree with you at all. I can totally see that perspective, it does definitely affect, people, and it could very well be. And I think that's kind of the problem with some of this stuff is it's like capitalism. Like all these companies are just way too big, and hopefully now with the kind of like shrinking of the majors, a lot of people that are losing their jobs are going to go out and start companies and create all kinds of new opportunities. And I feel like this is like what you see happen in this industry. It like gets fat and then thin and then fat and then thin. It's like the early 2000s were another phase of this, and it just feels like things need to shrink back down. There's a little bit too much control in like a couple people's hands at this point, 100%. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, Spotify came out and said that last year, half the money they paid out actually went to independents. So self-released artists and independent labels, which is a different metric than what we've been seeing over the years, which says that the major labels have about 65% of the market share. That, I think, has a lot to do with catalog acquisitions and sales, and it has to do with these like fat checks that they're getting cut from these various streaming or social media platforms. Because that's my other issue, if you're just going to nerd out for just a couple more minutes about the what's going on with this, is just like, I have taken issue with the majors kind of dictating the terms on behalf of the entire industry, just because it has seemed with social media companies in the past that they're not actually interested in cutting in negotiating a fair rate for artists and songwriters. It seems like they're interested in getting a fat advance check from the social media companies, which has tied to it that the social media platform will at some point work out some kind of rate that, like a content ID system that YouTube has, something that can be an ongoing payment mechanism. But because the way that it's gone, the platforms don't really have an incentive to do that. They're just like, here's your big check. Let's talk again in 5 years, and maybe we'll write you another big check so we don't have to work on this. And the majors are happy with that, but the indies get left out of that because we don't see any of that money trickling down to us when they write these big checks. And, you know, Facebook and Instagram have still not worked out a payment mechanism that is equitable, that really works. They're just happy with the way that they're being licensed because they just write big checks and Lucian's happy and the rest of the majors are happy because it goes to their bottom line, which is also why I think maybe they have a bigger market share is because they're getting these big checks from these social platforms, and that it's not really dependent on their catalog per se.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's a complex issue. I feel like there was like a board going around, and I'm forgetting the lawyer's name that was kind of like running it, that was trying to address all this stuff. I don't even know where.
Dina LaPolt. She has been, she's the attorney. We had her on the show actually. And she's part of SONA, the Songwriters of North America, and that board. And they do great work in fighting for a lot of this as well. And so, I mean, all this to be said, and sorry for the tangent. I mean, I was not actually planning to talk about this with you. But, you know, it's kind of the topic of the moment. And it's, we are at this disruptive time in the industry where I love your shrinking and expanding idea in that, like, I hope you're right. I hope that all the people that just got laid off from Universal will go and start indie labels and come up with totally new kinds of record deals. And like, you know, we've been seeing that happen with like a lot of the indie distributors. They're kind of like label service
masters.
And you work with United Masters, right? I feel like I saw Umi distribute a track with United Masters, or
she did. The song "Wherever You Are" with V from BTS is distributed through them, and they've been amazing. And I mean, I think that's a really exciting tier. You know, this tier of like, especially for developing artists, I think the majors are so great at doing the top 10%, but when it comes to the developing stuff, like, that's just kind of not what they do anymore. And I don't want to generalize because some are maybe great at that, but I find United Masters and those kinds of options where there's like a smaller team, but there's a team, and they're like, these people are world-class. I mean, they're just insane. And it's been so amazing to work with them on this project and see how they work. Like, it's been the exact perfect partner.
That's awesome. And are you doing a bunch of upcoming releases with Umi, or what's kind of the strategy over the next year?
We are entertaining offers right now, and we have an album that we want to put out. So we really kind of want to like get a deal in place like this month so we can start releasing singles in the next couple months. So we're very excited. Yeah, it's going to be great.
When you say a deal in place, is that a label deal, or is that another kind of distribution deal, or are you kind of exploring all the options right now?
We're exploring everything right now. It's really just about people. Like, we're trying to find our people because, in the past, when Keep Cool left RCA, that affected the plan, like for Umi when she released there. So I think she just wants to feel like she's really connecting with whoever we sign with, and that person's going to be there for her tenure there. So
how can you guarantee that?
United Masters, it could be, we don't know yet. We're getting lots of offers.
Sure. That's interesting. I'm curious, when you're exploring these offers and the various kind of companies and setups, what are you looking at most when it comes to the deals? You mentioned people, but like, we know, as we just saw with all the layoffs, that you can't really depend. You're not signing with people. You're signing with a company, with that, I don't think you have probably don't have a key man clause where you can follow that person if they leave. But tell me, when you're going into these offers, like, what you're really looking for and what you're weighing.
I mean, we're looking for like front end money, recording costs, money in pocket for the artists. We're looking at marketing budgets. We're looking at like, you know, shorter terms, like, you know, maybe 1+1 or 1+2, like to speak in because of
one
that
plus
reason.
One meaning one album firm and plus an option that they would get to do maybe another album or something like that.
Exactly. Okay. So, you know, when you talk about you can't really get key man clauses, at least if you keep the term relatively short, like most of those executives have a deal for their own, you know, with their label. So you're hoping that person will be there. So those are like the main things. And then there's other things here and there, you know, like tour support, which we don't really need. We might need for some different territories, but, you know, things like that. Yeah.
Cool. Interesting. And then the offers that you're considering, or maybe what you're seeing these days, I'm curious, are they licensing deals? Are they ownership? Is it?
Oh, I left that part out.
Yeah.
I mean, we like to have a master split if we can with it, as short license term as possible.
Okay.
Like what
that's huge. I mean, I'm curious from your perspective, since you've been doing this for a while and kind of seen the evolution of deals, have you noticed a shift in the kinds of record deals that are being offered to artists over the last few years versus over the last 10, 15, 20 years?
I mean, it just depends on the artist and the level and everything. But yeah, I think it's much more shifting to the towards artists having some ownership or getting their masters back. Like that old royalty deal, like standard is kind of, I haven't seen that in a while, you know, or if you do see those, it's like with brand new artists that a label is taking a big bet on, you know, but I haven't seen those personally in a while.
You mean the ones where the label keeps like 80 some percent?
Yeah, it's like an 18% royalty to artists.
Right. Yeah. Right, right. Mm-hmm. And the label keeps full ownership of the masters in perpetuity, all of that. So you're not seeing those deals as frequently. That's great.
Personally,
to hear.
I'm not, but I don't, you know, Umi's not really like, she's a little bit more established. So,
Yeah. No, I mean, that is very encouraging. And I think, you know, kind of getting back to what we were talking about initially is because artists can build their careers on their own. I mean, it's a, they have the ability to build up a career where it's clear they don't necessarily need the label, and the labels know that. And so it's more looked at as a partnership to enter into. And there's a more, it seems it could be a more respectful relationship. And it's a true partnership, whereas historically, you know, artists did kind of need labels if they wanted to kind of find a certain level of success. And now it's leveled the playing field a little bit more. That being said, it is also I would argue, far more difficult to be an artist these days because you're not getting any of that support until you reach a certain level where labels will even look at you. Now, Umi,
right. And it's so hard because there's so much out there and it's just so hard to cut through. I mean, Umi's a great example of that. Yeah. Like, you know, she's been independent now and she was independent before and she had one release, I think only, or maybe two on RCA. But anyways, so yeah, we, you know, again, she's such an eternal optimist, but she was just like, okay, we're back in the independent era and we've learned a lot in the independent era and we've had some great success. And I think she's at the point where she's ready for more support. And that's not to say that United Masters might not be able to give that because they're pretty full service, you know, but just saying like, you know, also Umi's a marketing genius and she knows how to work socials and she does. And I think that's a message to artists, like not to say that you have to be on every single one, but find one or two that you love and you got to do it. Like we all have, and some artists hate it, I know, but like everybody has parts of their job that they hate. And it's like, I just remember the days of like having to wait for the radio guy, having to wait for the journalist to pay attention to you. And like, they're so lucky they don't have to wait for that anymore. Like they can go and do it themselves. Like that's just such an incredible opportunity, you know?
Totally. And I completely agree that, you know, artists can kind of work to make their own success and don't have to wait or be given permission from the radio guy or the journalist or whatever. How do you talk to artists who struggle, or how do you work with artists, I should say, who kind of struggle to know what to do, or like how, who are maybe not marketing geniuses like Umi? Like, they just want to do the music. They just want to be in studio. They just want to write the songs. How, what is your approach with them that are less, accustomed or, well-versed in kind of the new style of self-promotion and digital marketing?
I mean, I try and tell them what I just told you, you know, like that you just kind of have to do it. Like it's part of your job. And like, you know, I don't think LeBron likes going to practice all the time or maybe wearing a suit to or the press yet. Like, but they do it. Like if you're going to be like at that level, if you're going to be successful, you've got to just like do it. Like it's part of your job. So that's what I say. I also say, like, in terms of the creative, like, find what's authentic to you. Don't try and, like, follow the trends. Like, just be yourself. Yeah. And that's, like, kind of becomes, like, a spiritual conversation, honestly, because it's, like, that is a hard thing that artists have to do is, like, put themselves out there and to the world. Like, that's really hard and scary, and I get that. I so get that. So it's, like, just kind of finding the authentic way to do it, and then surrounding them with a team if you can, like finding great digital marketing people that can help them accomplish that.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Have you worked with digital marketing people, with agencies or people that kind of help with social media and ads and all of that? And if so, like how has that gone?
I have. It's great. I have somebody right now who's just incredible, and she's independent. And I like she's soup to nuts. Like she can do the planning and the calendar as well as the creative. And she's really good at speaking in an artist's voice, which is not easy to do. And I feel like it's left brain, right brain, like to be able to like do the kind of like planning side, but also the creative is, it's a kind of rare combo. So I'm like, I'm going to use her for everything I can. You know?
What does she do specifically? Like, I mean, she creating the content? Is she posting? Is she running ads? I'm just like curious. All of it.
She's doing everything. You know, I mean, the labels help too, like with running ads and stuff. That's more like you hire an agency that does that separately, but she's just kind of like helping facilitate it. And usually it's based on a piece of content that the artist makes anyway that you're just boosting. So she'll help be making that content. She'll be helping us identify what's working the best, you know, and then she just like sits down with the artist and plans it all out and then shoots it and then executes.
That's awesome. Is she in the same physical location as the artist, or can she do this from afar?
She's the ones that she works with. She's in the same physical location, same city.
Okay. And I'm assuming
she might be able to do it from afar if they're able to like shoot themselves, I guess, but she can do the rest of it from afar.
So she helps shoot and everything like that.
I'm
curious your perspective on this, but that like, I've worked with marketing agencies from afar with, you know, artists that I manage, and it's been far more challenging because they'll come up with a concept and they're like, okay, now go off and shoot it. And you like, you shoot it, but it's like, oh, well, that's not exactly what we were thinking. And like, you're going back and forth. And then it gets to a point where the artist is just like, you know what, I'm done with this. I don't want to do this, whatever. So I think it, to be in the same location, to be able to shoot and get what you want, I think is something that I oftentimes might be overlooked, or is just a really big benefit for some of these digital social media managers.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, she's so incredible that she can do it all. But I know it's so hard. It's so hard. And it's like, you know, the platforms will tell you like organic works better. And then the next week they're like, actually something a little bit more produced works better, you know? Yeah. And so like, it's finding that line, and it's really honing in on that authenticity. Like, it's a very intuitive type of thing. Like, you got you, because if you're too glossy, people won't resonate. If you're like too DIY, people won't resonate. You got to find that like middle ground that's really authentic to you as an artist.
Ugh, it's so tough. And I mean,
hard. And also like, yeah, I don't know. I find it pretty miraculous that people can do it.
Real quick, I want to let you know about Too Lost. Too Lost is a new distribution company to the space. And let me tell you, I am very impressed with them. I got a full deep dive demo with the founder. And yeah, they're very innovative. And when you come into the distribution space at this stage with how crowded it is, you better be innovative. And they are. Yes, they will get your music out to Spotify, Apple Music, all the places, plus 450 other outlets around the world. They do not take a commission. This is why 300,000 artists and labels have already used them. They've already distributed 7 million songs. They offer payment splitting, and they don't charge your collaborators for this service for the payment splitting. They will just pay your collaborators directly for free. They have publishing administration with BMG, so you know it's legit. A lot of distributors have fallen into trouble with using some other less than legit pub admin services. Well, Tulos is partnered with BMG. You know it's legit. They offer instant royalty advances. This is something that's very cool. And if you have historical streaming data and you need just a bulk payment up front, they can see how much your music has earned in the past. I'm like, all right, we think we know what you're going to earn in the next 3 years. Here's a check for 100 grand or whatever it will be. And you can just click a button and get that distributed and into your account immediately. They do lyrics and credits distribution for free. They have a very innovative analytics platform where, yes, you will see real-time analytics for Spotify, Apple Music, but also Pandora, Deezer, SoundCloud, and Peloton. They're the only ones that do Peloton. They also have a service where you can search the internet wherever your music is being used, and it will just show you a chart of everywhere, every TikTok video, everywhere, every YouTube video, everywhere your music is possibly being used. I've never seen this before. That was very cool. They'll register you with Sound Exchange, and they have a fraud prevention tool, and they're doing fraud prevention. So if you're worried about your music, you know, getting a bot attack or something like that and getting ripped down, which we've seen is a big issue. They have fraud prevention tools that are better than most other distributors that I have seen. Check out Tulost. You can just go to tulost.com, use the promo code ARISTAKE for 3 months free and try them out. Let them know what you think. Yeah, I mean, I'm curious how this person, do you want to identify her? Does she have a name? Should we call her?
Her name's Jess. Why don't we just go by her first name? Yeah,
great.
Jess.
I'm curious how Jess and your artists, does she work with all your artists, or is it just Umi, or is it just like Bo?
It's Umi, and I've consulted with her on a couple artists. Yeah, okay. So mainly just Umi right now, though.
But because you mentioned authenticity with that, and you said that Umi's a marketing genius, I'm curious, like, you know, how much of what we see from Umi's social content is actually Umi doing it on her own and posting when she feels like it and doing that, and how much is Jess shooting, editing, adding the hook text on the screen, posting, how much is a collaboration? Like, kind of step me through that a little bit.
I think it's like mainly led by Umi, but I think Jess does get involved, and I think it's a collaboration. Like, I think Jess gives a lot of advice and cool. insight, and Umi really appreciates Jess's insight. And also, and in terms of like who does all the editing, honestly, I don't even know the answer to that question. I know Umi does a lot of her own stuff, but sure, I think Jess does some too. So I think it's probably a little bit of both.
That's great. I mean, it's another partnership, and it's kind of like, you know, this new age, it's like, you know, we have to piecemeal the people that we need as part of our team. And it's like, I'm seeing these like whatever you call them, like social media specialists, digital marketers, marketing agency, videographers, I mean whatever we want to call them, they're one of the most important aspects of an artist's team right now because of how important video is.
And to like,
and to like have that trust. It sounds like Umi, you know, trusts Jess and they're aligned, which I think is so crucial because so much of social media is really part of the artist's brand. And if like the person doesn't get the artist branding and they're just trying to do what they think is going to work, it ends up never working and it's not authentic, like you said.
It's so true. It's so hard. And I think it's kind of like a misconception right now that artists can do it all themselves.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that's true. Like, I think it's different. You're more your own like you're building your own team, I think. But it, yeah. even all the way back to the studio and recording, I think like you can do it all yourself, but you're probably better off working with an experienced producer, mixer, like mastering yes. engineer, you know. And same with social media. Like at some point, it's like too big of a job to do yes. for one person, even if you're capable. Like it's just yeah. way too much, you know. You need a team.
So as a manager, I mean, what is your role day to day currently right now? You referenced early on kind of a day to day manager. I mean, just tell me kind of how you operate and function as MPH Collective and as Michelle, the manager.
Well, I think my main mission statement and why I do what I do is because I love supporting artists. Like I love the concept of like what we were talking about earlier, how scary it is for an artist to bare their souls and put them out there, themselves out there in the way they do.
Yeah.
So it's like being able to give an artist a platform, like a very safe space to launch from is like kind of the way I envision it. So for me, it's just support. It's just listening. It's talking through. It's, you know, being a cheerleader. Like, I mean, I have to be passionate about everything I work with because otherwise I can't do my job. Like if I don't love it, I'll be inauthentic. Like it's just too important. I have to love it. Cause then I'm like, you're amazing. Like you don't understand. Like so it's that it's talking through, it's strategizing. It's just the business mind. It's saying like, these are the steps, like this is what we need to do. It's going out and finding the partners to do everything with. It's like shaking the trees. It's problem solving. It's moving the ball down the field, like making sure things are getting finished to completion. Like, you know, it's kind of like running all the teams. And then in terms of like the day to day, like that person is so valuable. His name's Eros, the person that I work with. And it's like my right arm. Like, you know, it's like a partnership in terms of like, I can't do it without him. And he fills such a space. Like he is young, he's cool. He's like, he has a different brain than me. Like he's really like, adept at the touring stuff. And like, he just has skills that are just so like valuable. And so it's like, we just kind of fill it out. Like he does more of the details, you know. I'm across all the details too. I'm watching everything. I'm reading every email. I'm guiding the ship. Like, I'm like, did we get this done? How's this? Like, you know, that those kinds of conversations. But then he's going out and kind of like executing more of the details.
Great. Cool. And that was a really great description of kind of how that works. When you said he's really good at the touring stuff, I want to talk a little bit about touring. Which of your artists actively tour?
Umi, Healy, those two. Bo, Will. They're about to put out a project, so they'll probably be touring like next year.
Cool.
But Umi and Healy, basically. And
do you have a booking agent for them?
I do. They both have, yeah.
Great.
I was going to tell you who they are if you want to know.
Please. Yeah, I do want to know.
Umi's is at Sarah Trani at WME. Okay. And Healy's is Mitch Blackman at, where is he now? I don't even know. He's moved. But, and then his partner day to day is this guy, Griffin. I think his last name's Perkiel. If I'm saying it correct. But yeah, those are the teams.
I believe if this is accurate, Mitch Blackman might be APA, but APA then became something else. So who
knows?
That's
what I mean. It's always like initials, you know?
Right. It's some three-letter initial booking agency is where he's at. Yeah, they're all three-letter. Okay, cool. So, and are these long-standing relationships that they've had beforehand, or did you bring these agents in for the projects?
Umi was with Sarah. Sarah actually brought Umi to me. So thank you, Sarah. Yes. And Mitch, I brought on to Healy. So because Healy's manager was Kyle Kernahan at CAA. And then he like left, or he would may have been at UT. I don't remember. But anyways, he left wherever he was. An agent. And he kind of retired from booking agent. And then I moved him over to Mitch.
When you're looking for booking agents, or I guess just in general, when a manager is looking for a booking agent for their artists, or an artist might be looking for a booking agent for themselves, what is the approach that you think artists and managers should be taking, and what should they be looking for?
I mean, it's so tricky right now coming out of COVID, although it's been a minute, but I was looking for booking agents for a couple artists like after mm-hmm. COVID, and they were so backlogged, kind of like catching up from all the canceled stuff during COVID, that nobody was really taking on anything new. Mm-hmm. But so that was hard. I think it's just like, it's not as easy, and touring so much more expensive. Touring has just gotten so much harder. Mm. In terms of what to look for, I think always it goes down to first, like the person, like find somebody who gets you, find somebody who gets your kind of music, like that does what you do. Yeah. I think building touring is the most important thing. Like artists, that's to me what legitimizes you as a real artist. Like, so focus on that from the beginning, you know, scrap it out when you're young, like get in a van and tour your 50-mile radius as much as you can, and then just let it grow out from there. I mean, that's how we used to do it before social media, you know?
I love the old school mentality. And that's what I mean, but that's what I hear is like, it's so, you really, there's nothing that can replace the live show. There's no social media, no live streaming, nothing can replace it. And you can't get better performing without performing. So like,
it's the best place to connect with your fans. Like fans go crazy. Like Healy's show in LA, like people were chanting the lyrics. It was packed.
So cool.
People were riveted. Same with Umi. Like I saw her, the first show I saw her at was Coachella last year. And I was so impressed because typically like, you know, at Coachella, like four songs in, people are starting to leave and go to the next thing. And her set was building and building, and people were like crying and chanting lyrics, like because these are touring artists, like they've built it, they've taken the time. And it's just, there's nothing more important. Those fans will be there for you. Like you might like get a big hit and you get really big for a while, and then eventually those are those fans, those core fans that are going to stay with you, you know?
Yep. Yep. And they'll always remember that experience, that concert, or if they meet you, especially if you're playing, you know, clubs or something where you're able to meet them, like that will stick with them for life.
It really does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's exciting. Like there's nowhere else that you can feel that energy, you know? It's just so infectious. Like you're just like, oh, I love this artist. Like, wow, look at them, you know? It's
yeah,
great.
Yeah. I love that. What size rooms are Umi and Healy playing?
Healy's at the club level. Umi is going to be in theaters, like three to five, like maybe like three.
3,000?
Yeah.
3,000? Mm-hmm. Amazing. Mm-hmm. And when you say club level, is that like, what level are we talking? 500 to 1,000?
500 to 1,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And so at both of these levels, what are you seeing kind of, well, first off, which was probably going to be surprising to a lot of people, and I've heard this, I'm curious, which is more profitable, the 500 to 1,000 club level or the 3,000 theater level?
It just depends on your, like, production, you know, like how many people you bring. Like, it just depends on the artist. I mean, when you start to get to the theater level, obviously your guarantees go up, so you can afford more. Mm-hmm. But I always try and keep my artists in the 35 and up profit margin. Like, you should never be spending, if you can't, I mean, obviously you have to invest to build. So sometimes when you're smaller, you might not be able to reach that because your guarantees just aren't high enough to afford for you to travel, because touring is getting so expensive nowadays, you know? But I think like you should always at least be making 35% if you can.
Profit. I love that. I love that.
I mean, and then 45, 50, like those are the goals, you know, like just don't overspend, like don't overspend.
And I mean, you mentioned guarantees, but are there other revenue generating things that you do on tour that you think are important? Like, where does merch come into this, and where do like maybe VIP offerings or anything else? Like maybe give me the breakdown. Maybe if we had to do kind of a percentage pie chart or something of like where the money comes from on tour.
You know, I don't know like the percentage, but we definitely always do VIP experience, like, because fans love it.
Awesome.
And so we do those, and that's a nice income. And then the merch, like, you know, merch does really well too. I mean, it's a little bit harder, like at the smaller level with merch, because you have to invest, it costs money to make all that stuff. So you have to invest in it. But so it's just a very, very fine line between overproducing, underproducing. Like, you want to make sure you have enough, but you don't want to have the stuff sitting around. So, you know, that's always like, but if you have a good merch company, they can usually project and work that out for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you use merch companies for your artists, or are you kind of DIYing that?
We do. We use merch companies.
Mm-hmm. Who do you use? Can you share that?
I've used Ceremony of Roses. Right now we're using Band Merch, I think it's called, for Umi.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
He's just one under, so we're looking again for him. We're just like talking to people now.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing. And their model, correct me if I'm wrong, is I guess you tell me their model. Are they fronting the cost? Are they taking a percentage of what you sell? Are they designing it? Like, what does a merch company do?
They can do all of that. They take a percentage. Like, typically, those are the deals I do. Every artist I've ever worked with does their own design. So I've never needed like a creative department, but they usually all have them. For me, what I'm usually looking for is more of a global reach. Like, it's just annoying when you have to deal with like six different merch companies in six different countries. It's so much work. So, like, you want the quality to be consistent and you want the designs to be consistent. So if you can find somebody that like can handle, like has partners in all different parts of the world, that's ideal.
Yeah, that's great. Do they handle vinyl too?
Do vinyl? Typically I do that through the label, you know. Okay. Like, we did flexi discs for wherever you are with Umi, and the label facilitated that. Usually that's
But you said the label Umi was United Masters. Are they do vinyl now too?
Yeah, they have an outside partner. I mean, yeah, they do. Cool. So we didn't do vinyl, we did flexi discs. Yeah.
Flexi disc. It's funny. I got one like right here. Somebody gave me I've never seen a flexi disc before, and somebody like gave me this. And for people that aren't watching, it's like these little flimsy little plastic square deals. This is Matt B. Shout out to Matt B. But it's so cool because you can sell these, and they actually do play. I put it on my turntable, and it plays. It's a single. It's essentially a 7-inch, but they're very cheap to create. And what do you sell them for?
I think we were selling them for like $10 or something.
That's awesome.
And then there's like a package deal with the remixes where you get a little bit of a discount if you buy them all together.
Brilliant. I love that. Yeah. No, that's great. What are some other merch items that you have, the creative merch items?
We're doing Umi's about to go to Japan, and she does, as her VIP experience, she does these sound bath meditations, which is a big part of her brand, which is awesome. So we're doing like towels and like journals, and we want to do water bottles. We do like the typical like tanks, hoodies, tees. We're doing a keychain. Like now we're just kind of doing the more typical stuff, because we're not like that. Like, when we get bigger, we'll be doing a lot more stuff, you know?
Yeah, for now. Mm-hmm. So cool. She have a fan base in Japan. Have you toured Japan before?
Yeah, this is her second time touring there. She went there last year. It's going really well. We're doing like regional shows now. We did China as well. We're doing South Korea and Philippines. So she's been doing a lot of touring over there.
Wow. How do you go about China, considering they don't have any of the same platforms that we have or social things? Are you working with a company that kind of helps you break into China and do all the Chinese stuff?
Yes. We're working with East Coast Global, and they're incredible.
Andrew. Yeah, of course. They're great.
I love him. He's so great. They're just doing a killer job. They're just like, you know, they scrape her socials here, and then they repurpose the content for the Chinese markets because you can't post the same stuff there. And it's going really well. And then we have a merch deal with them there. So they do the merch there, because those territories are tricky for merch. So they're doing it there. And
Did they book your tour?
I'm sorry?
Did they book your tour?
Sorry. You asked about touring. No, that was all through WME. Sam Wald.
Okay. I guess if you have a massive agency like that, they do China too.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Hey, China.
Great. Mm. That's awesome. Very cool. So in terms of, I do want to touch on Kai Going Crazy a little bit, your producer client, which is kind of, I'm very different than like an artist client, I would imagine. What is the approach having, I guess, managing a producer?
So I just also signed another producer named Austin Brown, who cool. is from the band Hablo Brown, and he's mm-hmm. incredible, as is Kai Going Crazy. They're both incredible talent.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. I mean, it's just really like making sure that people know who they are. Like, you're getting their names out there. You're reminding people of them. It's just a lot of that kind of hustle, like getting beat packs out, but also like getting in-person meetings, because obviously sitting in a room listening to music is much different than sending a beat pack. Like, so doing like in-persons, and also like they're artists in their own right. Like, even though they're not a full artist project, like, you know, putting them in front of people, letting people meet them and see how they are in a room is a huge selling point. So those are the things that I work on. I mean, in terms of like sessions, and, you know, it's just kind of like hitting everybody, you know, and just, it's fun because it puts you in contact a lot. Like, with an artist, you kind of have your team and that's it. Like, you're not talking to like multiple labels and multiple publishing companies and A&Rs, but with a producer, you talk to everyone, because you're like, let's put our people together, you know? So that's a lot of fun, just being in touch with lots of different people.
Nice. Do they have publishing deals?
Austin doesn't. We're like in talks now, and Kai does. He signed a prescription.
Okay. So I would imagine they're setting up a lot of sessions and doing a lot of that legwork there.
Yeah, they do. Cool. They're incredible. They've been doing an incredible job, and we do. Like, we have our connection. So it's kind of like a team effort.
Nice. And then you mentioned beat packs. Talk to me more about what those are and how you, when you, yeah, what do they, what do you use them for? What are beat packs?
So like, Kai is like very specific. You know, sometimes it'll just be like a general beat pack that you'll just send out to people, and that's just like tracks. So it's like a track with no top line. So it's like a beat, maybe with
just
a loop.
An instrumental production
kind of
thing that someone could top line over. Okay.
And so, but with Kai, like, he'll be like, okay, well, who are you looking for? And so we'll be like, okay, Cardi B or whoever, you know, we'll just throw out an artist name, and he'll either make one specifically, or he'll go through his like archives and find stuff that fits that artist. So then it's just like a link with several different, you know, produced out tracks, like you said, that go out to those artists. And then with someone like Austin, who's more like, Austin does many different genres. His main thing is like R&B, but he also does country, hip hop, you know, rock. He does everything. We'll make buckets. So it'll be like folders. Like, these are our, you know, country tracks, these are our R&B tracks, and then it's more sessions, but you can just send those out. It helps sometimes people pick them and want to use them, and sometimes it just helps them understand the producer, and then they can like get in with them.
Got it. And what, when you say buckets or folders or any of that, what platform are you using for this?
Dropbox typically. Okay. I like Disco for artists links, because like, it's a streaming thing, and it's it plays through. It's a lot easier than Dropbox, and, you know, I wish Dropbox would like play through, but it doesn't. For the producers, it's usually Dropbox.
And that's interesting, because it makes sense, because Dropbox works so seamlessly with a lot of the DAWs, and it works in the cloud, and so they probably use Dropbox themselves, whereas like Disco is kind of the industry standard for sync, and it's gotten really good at sending streaming links with full metadata and all that stuff, and very good streamable links. But I'm curious. So do either of your producers sell any beats?
No, I mean, they may have in the past, but not since I've worked with them.
Not with you. Okay. Or have they sold any, like, is any part of the business licensing or selling, like, samples or anything like that or any beats or no, it's just about Austin, getting into the room.
Yeah, I think Austin has actually done that in the past, but not, I mean, I've only been working with him very short time, so not since I've been working with him.
But the goal and focus, got it. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask is the goal and focus getting in the room with other songwriters, with producers, with artists rather, to get cuts and get releases?
Yeah, that's the goal.
Okay.
But, cool. You know, I think it's really important for artists. You mentioned like artists versus like songwriters and producers. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important for producers to get in with producers and songwriters. Like, I think sometimes that's a missed art. And I think like a lot of times stuff comes out of those and they think that they need an artist in the room, but a lot of times the artists aren't in the room when songs get created. So I think it's just a really important like thing not to miss.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Did you see, what was it? The New York Times did this like diary of a song and they do this series, which I think is like really cool, where they kind of like profile the start to finish of like how a song is created. And they kind of show this process. And I'm trying to remember, I think it was the, what was that? Maren Morris, Zed track from a few years back, The Middle, if you remember that.
Yeah.
And like, if you haven't seen this, I recommend it. It's like very short. It's like 10 minutes, 8 minutes, something like that. But they highlighted how it started with just songwriters and producers and no artists involved. But the songwriter would top line and sing and everything. And then like this process of going from the songwriter and producers to then a bigger name songwriter, they like sent it to Zed and like Zed signed off. And then it finally made its way to Maren Morris after going around through all these other artists, like essentially auditioning the top line, like big artists, and it didn't work for any of them. And then finally, like, oh yeah, this is the right singer for this. And it was like how this evolution of just like how it went. But in the end, you know, massive, massive hit.
Yeah, you hear about these stories, like, oh, Beyonce had it on hold forever, or so-and-so had it on hold, and then it gets released, and then it goes to another artist. It's really fascinating.
Right. What does on hold mean?
I think it means that they were going to record it and put it on their album, and then maybe their project is taking longer, or it gets bumped for something else, and then they release it because it didn't make the cut, or, you know, I don't know. That's how I understand it.
Do artists have to pay to put a song on hold, or do they just have some kind of a... How does that work?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Okay.
We need to ask a publisher that question, but I don't think they do.
Okay. Yeah. Songwriters do get the shaft because if you want to hold like on a playwright, like, or a screenwriter rather, like if you want a screenplay put on hold, like that's an option agreement. That's like, that's a lot of money. That's a whole other conversation we're going to do.
I know. It probably just depends on the size of the artist, too. And maybe it depends on the producer, because maybe if they're like, it's been on hold for Beyonce for a year, is she going to use it? But the hope of Beyonce putting their song out is like enough to like leave it there for longer. But then if it's like somebody that's not as big, maybe they'd be like, nah, let's move on. You know? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We had... where is this? Kevin Garrett, who wrote Beyonce, the first track on Lemonade, Beyonce's Lemonade, Pray You Catch Me. And he was on the show and he told me that he didn't even know the song, because he wrote the song. He didn't even know it was going to come out on Lemonade, on Beyonce's record, until literally the day it came out. And he wakes up to Lemonade and having a cut on the Beyonce album because, you know, it was in consideration with all the other ones. And that's just like wild how that kind of can work.
I know
like
that does happen a lot. Like they don't know until after, you know, which is, that's tough. It's tough.
Awesome. Well, Michelle, thank you so much. This has been so illuminating, and I appreciate you like nerding out with me on a lot of these things and just like going deep and like really getting into the weeds of a lot of these topics that, you know, are really important to emerging artists, to managers, and like stuff that maybe, you know, a lot of people don't really talk about a lot. And I appreciate you being so candid and transparent with a lot of this. I know the people listening are really appreciative of how open that you've been around this. I have one final question that I ask everyone who comes on the show, and that is, what does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
I mean, I just want to have fun. Like, I want to make a living, obviously. Like, I want to make like a decent living. I want to work with people that there's a mutual respect and appreciation. And, you know, I really don't want to work with people that don't value me. So that's a big one, because I think a lot of managers maybe don't have that. So that's a big one for me. But that's kind of it, you know, just enjoy, have fun.
Michelle, thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you. Pleasure meeting you. Thanks for having me.
Today's episode was edited by Ari Davids with music by Brassroots District and produced by all the great people at Ari's Take. This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features. Annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com.